Good evening, everyone. This is Jamie Jackson, and this evening we will be exploring the relationship between our consumption of meat and
climate change. Many of us have long been aware that the reliance on meat in our diet contributes to a host of personal health problems that increasingly plague Americans, including heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes, obesity, harmful cholesterol, even erectile dysfunction. One scientific study found that a daily consumption of red meat raised participants' average mortality rate by 13%. But what about the health of the planet? Meat consumption is increasing and is projected to continue to increase. What are the consequences to the planet if this global trajectory on consumption of meat continues? We are honored today to have as our guest Trey Bennett, nurse practitioner and clinic director of Integrative Health Providers, where he provides evidence-based solutions to prevent, treat, and reverse acute and chaotic health, chronic health conditions. Trey will help us understand why reducing or eliminating our consumption of meat is not just about our personal health. It can also significantly diminish the danger of climate change. We will explore why current dietary practices that include meat are not sustainable for the health of the environment. And listeners, we invite you to call in with your questions or comments. Our number is 816-931-5534. So Trey, welcome to Radioactive Magazine. Can you give us an overview of how the meat industry contributes substantially to climate change?
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here. And as a healthcare provider, today I was kind of pondering this question, and I came up with a health analogy. And so I'd like everyone to kind of think of the earth as a body. And the trees and plants are essentially like the lungs of the earth. They absorb the carbon dioxide and pollutants and release oxygen for us to breathe. And so large areas of forest, such as the rainforest or even other large areas of forest, are essentially like large air purifiers for us, and they're kind of like the lungs of the earth. So in my mind, the meat industry is analogous to lung cancer when comparing in this analogy. So cancer starts with mutated cells, and in this analogy, that mutation would essentially be kind of corporate greed. And so cancer invades normal cells and causes destruction. And this destruction in this analogy would be the deforestation for livestock and feed production for to raise livestock. Cancer also sends out kind of tentacles to grow and spread, and these, in this analogy, are in the form of air and water pollution. So the meat industry and the raising of livestock in general pollutes the air with the stench of the odor of the feces of the animals, along with polluting the water with all kinds of runoff that is washed away from these areas where animals are kept. And the products of these industries are, in fact, a carcinogen as well. So processed meats are a known type 1 carcinogen, and red meat is a type 2 probable carcinogen. And this was released in 2015 by the International Agency for Research on Cancer.
Okay, terrific. So I'd like our listeners to understand what is methane and how does methane and CO2, carbon dioxide, how does those gases aggravate climate change?
Yes, so
methane. And then just include how that works out with the cattle.
Sure, yes. So methane and CO2 are greenhouse gases, and that means that they essentially stay trapped in our atmosphere, which is naturally primarily hydrogen and oxygen. But carbon dioxide and methane are get trapped in the atmosphere, and they trap the heat. So essentially our Earth is not able to expel the heat. So a small increase in carbon dioxide and methane in the atmosphere can have a large effect on temperatures. So an increase in greenhouse gases in general has a direct effect on a temperature rise in our on our Earth. And methane is actually 28 times more potent than CO2. So CO2 is what is emitted from our vehicles when we drive around. And methane is emitted from cattle burping is actually the primary source of methane when it comes to livestock. They have a stomach much different from ours. They have it's almost like a system of four different stomachs, and so the methane gas is actually burped out typically.
And if I understand it correctly, the methane that's produced by cows and goats and sheep, that methane is actually a more powerful, has a more powerful impact on climate change as opposed to the CO2. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. Methane is over 20 times more potent than CO2. So this allows us to come to the conclusion that decreasing our meat intake or completely eliminating it would improve our environmental footprint essentially greatly.
Okay, and I think there are other ways in which the meat industry affects climate change. For example, on land use, you refer to when you have a clearing to provide a place for the cows to pasture. So more and more places are being cleared of trees that we need to, that's part of the health system of our planet, in order for the cows to graze. Could you comment on that?
Yes, definitely. So land use is kind of one of the major issues because about 70-80% of the land that is used for agriculture is actually used for meat production. And that may sound like a really large number. And the reason it's so large is because a lot of the crops that we actually grow are actually grown to feed these animals. So the number one crop grown in the U.S. right now is corn. And we've got 125 million acres of feed corn being grown, and just 2% of the corn that is grown in the U.S. is actually edible by humans. So you can tell that it's highly skewed in the direction of growing these crops for other animals to eat, for us to in turn eat the animals. And
okay, and listeners, I want to remind you that we invite you to call in this evening with your questions, or if you want to challenge anything that's being said, or your comments. So the number here is 816-931-5534. Okay, so I wonder if you can talk about antibiotic resistance. That's affected also. A lot of people are concerned with the increasing resistance to antibodies, and that's a threat to people's lives when the resistant organisms become resistant to drugs. So I wonder if you could comment on that. Sorry for stumbling a little.
Oh, that's okay. So I actually have a few more points to cover on the land use too. I'll go back to those really quickly before addressing the antibiotic resistance. But currently, the standard American diet takes up approximately 2 football fields to feed one person for a year. And if everyone in the world ate the standard American diet, we would essentially need two Earths to produce that much meat and those that many animal products. But if everyone went to a plant-based diet, two football fields can actually feed 14 people. So that's an interesting fact that I was personally surprised to when I uncovered that fact. And another surprising fact is that if everyone went plant-based or vegan, 5 billion football fields could be returned to forest. So that gives you an idea of how much land these animals are occupying, along with the feed that is grown for them to actually eat, for us to in turn eat the animals. And I can address the antibiotic resistant issue here now. And so concentrated animal feeding operations are essentially the worst of the worst when it comes to animal agriculture. And these are kind of nicknamed factory farms as well. So 99% of the animals that are eaten in the U.S. are actually produced on factory farms. So unfortunately, if you're eating meat, you're probably essentially buying meat from these factory farms. Only 1% of the meat available in the U.S. is actually natural animal food. So these concentrated animal feeding operations feed these animals lots of grains and essentially kind of what's left over from taking away the oil from other grains or beans such as soybeans. They also feed these animals what they call 4D animals, and these are dead, dying, diseased, and disabled animals. So even though cattle and most of these animals are typically herbivorous in their natural habitat, we will actually, in a CAFO, it's actually a common practice to grind up these animals, the 4D animals, and put them into the feed to feed them back to the cows, for instance.
Really? And so you're saying that cows are fed ground up meat?
Yes, yes. So cows are fed ground up meat, animal waste, and all kinds of other. One of the other things that's really surprising is that they actually give them plastics because their bowels are not designed essentially to eat what they're being fed. So they have to give them plastics and all these antibiotics and drugs in order for them to stay healthy enough for us to raise them and slaughter them. So These animals are in such tight spaces that oftentimes they can't even turn around. So, diseases kind of run rampant there. And so the antibiotics are actually necessary. And believe it or not, 80% of the antibiotics that are produced in America go towards animals. So only 20% are actually consumed by humans. So, antibiotic resistant infections really truly are an issue. I used to work in the hospital and we would see them quite a bit. And so when these animals are fed antibiotics consistently throughout their lifetime, they can essentially pass on those antibiotic resistant infections to those of us that eat them.
All right. And so just to call attention to some articles, that's how I got interested in this subject, because I've been vegetarian for 25, 30 years. But it wasn't until recently that I realized what a tremendous impact the animal feed industry has on actual climate change. So in the mainstream media, New York Times and The Guardian, to mention a couple, there have been articles which cite scientific studies pointing out what a tremendous impact meat eating has on climate change. And it will continue to have an ever greater impact as more people can afford meat and turn to meat in their diet. So I wanted to call attention to the difference, kind of compared. I wonder if you know anything about the comparison between the impact of driving your car, taking a plane, all the things that we're told to limit for the sake of climate change as compared to consumption of meat. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes. So food production is essentially responsible for one-third of greenhouse gas emissions annually, and that's actually more than all transportation combined. So if you took all the cars, all the planes, trains, and automobiles and add them up, they would not reach the amount of emissions that food production produces, and that is primarily from the meat industry.
Okay. So we can remind ourselves that climate change has an effect on, mostly on the, will have an effect on global conflicts that will increase, and it will be the poor people on the earth who will suffer the most. So if we want to try and do something about that, one of our actions that is completely within our control is to reduce or eliminate our meat consumption. And yet I know from talking to friends and acquaintances that there's a lot of resistance to doing that. Can you talk about, do you have an experience with talking to people about turning to a plant-based diet?
Yes, so there definitely is resistance, especially in our Kansas City culture here. I was born and raised here as well. I was raised on meat, potatoes, and barbecue, meat, potatoes, and more meat. So essentially, it can be a struggle, definitely, especially when our friends and family are often celebrating with barbecue or other meats. But what myself and my family have done is essentially find other alternatives that we can bring to these gatherings, as so we can participate still and be a part of these family and friend gatherings. We just don't have the meat. We've got other delicious alternatives that are just as easy to cook and in my opinion, much more delicious, even definitely healthier than your average meat dish here in Kansas City.
Right. And then I know that I have a cookbook at home by Mark Bittman, who's a very well-known New York author, and has a whole cookbook on vegetarian recipes. And he suggests that if you want to just cut back on meat, that one way to start is to just be vegan before 6 o'clock in the evening, and then after six, at least for a while, you can go ahead and eat your meat after 6 o'clock. And of course, some people are saying meatless Mondays, and I'm thinking, well, yes, we could start with meatless Mondays, and we could go to meatless weekdays.
There you go.
Do you have any other strategies like that you share with people?
Yes. So essentially, it's a process. Going vegan overnight isn't for everyone, that's for sure. And in fact, I did not myself. One of the strategies that I used when I transitioned was essentially using the meat and dairy products that we still had in our house to flavor foods instead of having them be the main course or the main dish of these meals, essentially. So we would, for instance, instead of having a large chicken breast and potatoes and vegetables or something like that, we would have more potatoes and vegetables and a smaller amount of chicken. And this, again, was as we were transitioning. We didn't want to, you know, throw away a ton of food or anything like that. And it's just a way to kind of ease into it. You will start to feel better. Believe it or not, the less meat and dairy you eat, you will start to feel better. So,
all right. And since we're focusing on the effect on climate change, what I know a little bit about is how cows, sheep, and goats affect climate change because they have grazing areas that get cleared and because of the methane that they produce. But I wonder if you think that for somebody who's going vegan, if a chicken is a better alternative for the interim. What does chicken have to do with climate change, for example?
So chickens... chickens would be less contributory to climate change than beef, for instance. The larger the animal, the kind of less efficient it will be to bring that that meat to market overall. Chicken in general, I'll be honest, some of the last meat that I ate was chicken, turkey, and fish, and so I think they're that's part of the progression towards plant-based is you know, a lot of people cut out the red meat first and then maybe cut out the dairy and then slowly transition off the other white meats, but unfortunately a lot of the chicken and fish get kind of a health halo or a really good
they have a better reputation.
Yes, a better reputation than the red meat, but they actually have a lot of cholesterol and saturated fat in them as well. So actually, the number one in America, the number one source of dietary cholesterol is chicken.
Really?
So,
okay.
Yes.
And I'm just guessing that chickens also get saturated with antibiotics.
They sure do, yes. They definitely get a lot of antibiotics. When they are in CAFOs, they are literally in barns with wall-to-wall chickens, essentially. So they definitely consume a lot of antibiotics, and so they would definitely have those as well. I like the vegan before six idea. That's a new one for me, actually. I kind of like that idea. There are definitely some plant-based processed vegetable alternatives as well.
Right.
Such as the fake meats, the meat replacements, essentially, like the chickens and the other burger replacements.
Right, right. And I know I took me a while to discover there's a sausage that's made from eggplant and a bunch of different vegetables that is sold at a few supermarkets in town.
Yes.
And it's delicious and it's quite healthy, I think.
Yes. We had some sausages last night. I was just talking about going to a friend's and barbecuing. We actually went last night and we had some sausages that are essentially primarily made of you know, grains, essentially, and they're delicious. They're really, really good. So a lot of my omnivore friends actually like them as well. So
right, right. So okay, so, you know, one of the articles I read said, which would you rather do, give up your car or give up eating meat? So I just throw that question out to our listeners. And, you know, years ago, we were encouraged to change our light bulbs to something that used less energy. And so that was something that was in our own control. And reducing or eliminating meat is also an individual choice that's totally under the individual's control. It's just maybe not as pleasant as changing the light bulb. Did you want to add anything, Trey?
Well, I'd like to just say that you can definitely improve your personal and the health of the whole earth and the environment by leaving animals off your plate. It's really just as simple as that. And animal foods really kind of cause disease and destruction, and plant foods have the power to reverse disease and climate change. So,
right. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Thank you for tuning in to Radioactive Magazine. And next week, tune in, and Craig LeBeau is going to have Micah Kubik with the ACLU to talk about immigration. So stay tuned right here on KKFI 90.1 FM for Counterspin, followed by Taste of Tejano. And I want to thank Trey again and Jamie both for a very informative show, and that was very interesting. Thank you, guys.